Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
Yes, you are, and it's a beautiful day, and today we're going to talk about how to install solar on your home, or why does everything have to be so ding dang complicated?
You know what? This is great because we're in a position right now where solar is going to be so hot, so jazzy, so sexy, and we're ready, aren't we?
We're in the age of solar. And a lot of folks, when they think about solar, you know, they have this impression, okay, I've heard about it before, it's very expensive. Well, we've talked about it in previous shows, and we'll talk about it today. It's really not expensive. In fact, in today's market, solar is the lowest cost energy that is available anywhere by far, lower than coal, nuclear, natural gas, wind. It's the cheapest. So get that out of your brain, because it is the cheapest. But then now, because it's so cheap, we're starting to hear a lot of misinformation. There are a lot of companies out there, all the cowboys and all of the scam artists and all of those kind of folks are coming out of the woodwork in the world of solar. So I wanted to maybe dispel a few of those issues. So if you're just thinking, okay, all right, you convinced me solar is for me, how do I put it on my house? How do I go about doing that?
Well, let's just back up for one step and say that there are a lot of credible people installing designing solar, and that you should, if you're thinking about this, find somebody who's had it installed, maybe a neighbor or your local government organization or whatever that is, and find out if they liked the installer and what they have to say about them, and get a couple of people giving you feedback so you have somebody who's credible, because there's a lot of really great people out there installing and wanting to do well.
And don't always go for the low cost.
No,
you know, the low cost can well, we like to say free can be very expensive.
Yeah, it generally, it's never free, actually.
Right. And there are some companies out there that'll say, we'll install it for nothing. In fact, we'll give you money back. And I'll touch on that in a little bit because, you know, first off, just assume that you're being lied to when you hear
there's
that.
There's one online now that says we're going to give you $2,000, and they're all over Facebook, so they're spending the big bucks.
Okay, well, we'll kibosh that. But anyway, the first, let's talk about this step by step, very precise. Use my engineering mindset.
So the first step is you got to find a reputable person to do the install.
Well, that may not be the first step, but it's certainly first step is convincing yourself, and then you know. And it's usually convincing your relatives, you know, not to ridicule you.
Yeah, your parents are going to have a lot
to say
about it.
Or your spouse, you know, you gotta be all in this together. And so a lot of people will come to me and say, well, how much does a solar system cost? Which is like saying, how long is a piece of string? How deep is a hole? You know, it would be like me coming to you and saying, how much does a house cost? And you go, all right. I need a little more information, like where is this house located? What's it made of? You know,
that's the same things that you're going to talk about if you want to install
it's the
a
same
solar
thing. It's
array.
How much does a car cost? Well, are you talking about a Jaguar or my old VW? You know, I mean, so there's a lot of parameters. So the first thing you need to know is, what do you want to run or service with this array? And that's known as your load. All right. Anything that you plug into an electrical outlet, anything that uses power is referred to as a load. And the amount of power that you use on any given day is called your daily load. Now, you can get a solar array that will service everything, you know, 100%, or you know, a part of it. You know, that's up to you. That's really up to how much you can afford, how much space you have, things like this.
So, but how do I figure out what my load is?
All right. Well, it's really, really complicated. For most people,
no, it's not.
Most people look at your electric bill.
Yeah, way.
Right?
Yeah. All right.
You know, for an existing home, you're already going to be told how much you're using. And it's sort of like New Year's resolutions or going on a diet. Don't pretend like you're actually going to use less than you currently do. You know, if you're using a certain amount of kilowatt hours each month, assume you're going to continue to, you know, a lot of people get all these good intentions. Oh, I'm going to cut way back and we're going to, so make your adjustments off of what you currently use. If you've got a teenage kid living at home who's about to leave, well, your electric bill may be cut in half because they're no longer standing at the refrigerator with the door open going,
taking 20-minute showers.
Yeah.
But the other thing is also to think into the future, because maybe you're going to get an electric car, although that doesn't influence and use that much electricity.
It can.
But maybe you're going to build an extension or have a farm with heaters for your water.
Put in a hot tub.
That's right. That's what we did. So, So just to think about what's the future.
Right. So that would be referred to as future proofing. And when you get really deep into it, you can do some things to prepare for that. But I'm not going to get into that here. I'm just saying, okay, determine your load. And the average load for the average suburban home in America today is around 900 kilowatt hours per month.
Is that how it's rated on your bill?
Yeah, kilowatt hours, that's how you, those are the units of energy, 1,000 watt hours.
Don't you need somebody with a doctorate though to decipher that electric bill?
No, just look at it. For most of them, it's just simply, it says this is how much you use. In fact, they'll often tell you what you used each month, and then they'll tell you what your average usage is, you know, per month over the course of the year. So that, but if you get a reputable solar installer, they're going to take a look at that. They'll know, you know, just give them your electric bill. Then the second thing you need to know is your property going to be suitable to have a solar array? And you'll kind of know that if you live in a wooded area, you know, and everything is shaded, probably solar's not your best bet.
But you also could go to Google Earth and get some, a little research and see how it looks.
Well, that's what we do if we're assessing someone else's. But if you live in the house, you're gonna know. So you want to
you're being generous. I just want to say you are being generous.
I'm trusting the folks that if they go outside and the sun's not hitting them in the face, they'll realize it.
But what time of the year is that, you know?
Right. So there's some orientation issues. If you want to put it on your house, on your roof. And it doesn't have to be on the roof, but if you want it on the roof, you want this thing oriented towards the south. South is ideal because in the northern hemisphere, the sun is always in the southern portion of the sky, lower on the horizon in the winter, higher up off the horizon in the summer, but it's always going to be oriented towards the south when you're in the northern hemisphere. Yes, ma'am.
Well, the other thing is that if you're putting it on a roof of a building on your property, you probably want to make sure your insurance company doesn't have any qualms and there's no engineering issues with the structure of the roof.
Yeah, I mean, a solar array doesn't add that much weight to the roof. It's no more than a second layer of shingles, and mostly people, you know, when they're having their shingles done, they'll often leave the first layer and put a second layer on. But many cities will require that you have a structural evaluation done as part of your permitting process. If you look at your roof and it looks pretty dodgy, you know, it's it's kind of sway back like an old horse,
like
or
whatever. Our barn.
Yeah. Or if when you walk up on the roof, if you ever are so inclined, and you don't feel safe, you know, like you can feel it giving way underneath of you as you're walking, then you're probably going to need to have a little bit of structural upgrading before you get into that. And also another thing to think about is if your shingles are like, if you've got a shingle roof and if they're like 20 years old, you may want to look at replacing the shingles and putting solar in at the same time. There's no sense having an old roof, putting a solar array on, and then 2 or 3 years later having to get up there and replace, you know, pull the array off and replace your shingles. So do a little forethought. But the question is, do you want them on the ground? Because a ground-mounted system, you avoid all of that stuff. But you got to have room, you know, you got to have space. So if you're in the country or suburban area or whatever, a ground-mounted system might be good. You can use it to store things under, you know, like
park your
lawnmower or your car.
Use it as a loafing shed.
Yeah, we let the goats hang out underneath there. So there's lots of uses there. But once again, if you're in one of those uptight gated communities or whatever, your homeowners association mm-hmm. may have some things to say about this.
Or your homeowners next door.
Yeah, well, they may complain, but they may not have a whole lot to say. But a homeowners association often may have restrictions saying, okay, the solar array cannot face the road. So if your house is a southern facing towards the road, that might be problematic. Can't be in the front yard, things like that. And those may be reasonable, may not be. A lot of people think solar arrays are unsightly, you know, so they don't want them. I think cars are unsightly. I think people are unsightly. I would like them to be gone. So, you know, I mean, why they get a say in those things, who knows, but they do.
Well, in places like France, the church has the say. They are opposed to solar energy, so they don't want to be able to view it from the church.
Right. And beyond your homeowners association, if you have one, then your city, county, those are referred to as authorities having jurisdiction. They may have some rules and requirements. There may be permits that are required. Often you have to have an electrical permit because this is an electrical thing. Or you may have to have a structural permit if you're putting it on your home. Usually ground-mounted systems don't have to have any kind of electric or structural permit.
Well, so how do you figure out, you know, the cost and what is a watt? Because I know that's involved in the formula.
Well, you know, a watt, I guess I don't want to get too deep into it, but we want to generate watt hours of energy, and solar arrays are rated in watts. So we talk about how much sunlight, how many hours of insulation, how many hours of 1,000 watt per square meter energy hits your house. So as an example, in Ohio, most parts of Ohio, you're going to find four and a half hours of 1,000 watt energy hits that hits a given location on average over the course of a day. So you would simply...
And that's averaged out over a year. Yeah, so it's really basically how many hours on average...
How many hours of pure sunlight.
Sunlight is going to hit directly right. onto that spot.
So you divide then your load, your daily load, by the number of hours, and that's going to give you the size of your array. If it were 100% efficient, but it's never 100% efficient, so you figure out how much inefficiency is in it, usually going to be 90 to 95% efficient, and you divide that. And that's how you end up with the array, but we don't have to get into that, even though we just did. all right. So there are several different types of solar arrays that you may want to consider. One is grid-tied. And a grid-tied system, you're connected to the electrical grid. This is normal. This is the normal type. And you use the grid like it's a battery. So you generate extra energy in the daytime. It pumps that extra power onto the grid. Then at night, when you need power, you pull it from the grid. And the meter goes forward, the meter goes backwards, and you pay the net balance, which is referred to as net metering. Okay.
So what it really is that the grid, the system that you use before you have solar energy, is serving as your battery backup, and there's no way to store that energy on your property.
Right. You don't need to.
Unless you have batteries.
You just think of the grid as an unlimited battery, which is great unless
that
battery
like that.
Fails. No. Well, they don't necessarily
they don't like
mind.
That.
But if the grid goes down, your system is designed to shut off.
Right.
Because you don't want to be pumping power onto the grid when someone's working on that system, because you might electrocute them. So that's referred to as islanding, and all of these grid-tied systems have to have an anti-islanding. So basically they turn off when the grid goes down, and then a lot of homeowners go, well, then what the heck's the purpose of having solar? I wanted power when the grid was down, and I don't have power anyway. And we'll touch on that in just a second, but I wanted to remind everybody that you're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to remind you that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God, especially today.
Yes, the sustainability of the world has been in question, and we are doing our little part to tell you how to make the world just that much brighter and happier by putting solar on your home.
Actually, I wasn't thinking of that.
All right.
But okay.
So anyway, So anyway, we were talking about the different types. So when the grid, when it's grid tied, that's the cheapest, but you don't have power when the grid goes down. So then some people will say, all right, how can I have power when the grid goes down? And you can add batteries. So it's referred to as a coupled or grid interactive system. And now what happens is, okay, it operates like a grid tied system when the grid is functioning. When the grid goes down, it disconnects you from the grid, protecting any linemen who might be working on the system, and then runs your system from batteries and your solar array. And that's great. That's the best of all worlds, except that it's a little more expensive. Well, can be substantially more expensive.
Yes.
And then, of course, there's the third type, standalone. And this is what a lot of people think of when they think of solar, where you tell, you know, you're going to disconnect yourself from the world. You're going off grid.
Homesteader.
And you're going to be out there and you can just not care if what happens, and I'm all self-sufficient. And that is definitely the most expensive. So most people opt for grid-tied system, and more people are going into the grid-tied with batteries because the cost of batteries are coming down. And they're coming down pretty dramatically. So speaking of cost, what would you expect to pay? You know, well, for you, we've got a special offer. No. So the typical cost of a solar array in today's market in the United States will cost you anywhere from about $2.50 to $3 a watt. And I told you that solar arrays are rated by watts. So for the average home, we're going to be looking at about a 6,000 watt system for just the average house. That's, you know, don't hold me to that, but that's going to be kind of average. So you could say that it's going to be somewhere between $15,000 to $18,000, which is a substantial investment, right? Not when you're talking about a $400,000 home. It's not that substantial, but it's still a significant investment. So that is before any incentives, and that's if you pay full retail. So that's the world we live in today. But there are some financial incentives out there still for solar. A lot of people will say, oh yeah, you know, renewable energy is always subsidized. But in reality, it is fossil fuels are subsidized about $5 for every $1 renewable energy is. But that's a different show, which I think we already
We've already done that show.
So there's a $26 or 26% federal tax credit. So basically, if you spend $10,000 on a solar array, you can deduct $2,600 as a tax credit. So 26% of the total cost of your system. So that's money right off your taxes. It's a dollar for dollar credit. And that was set to expire in 2020, but it's been extended for three years.
That's a federal credit.
That's a federal tax credit. Yes. Then there are some local incentives. Some cities will not assess you more on your property for the added value. So you get that break. Some states will waive the cost of buying solar products from sales tax. So that's an incentive. In the state of Ohio, there's a nice program called EcoLink, where if you're working with a bank and you say you want to participate, you're financing your system, they will actually subsidize 3% of the interest rate on your loan. There are some USDA grants. It's called the REAP program, and it's like rural electrification something. Anyway, REAP.
But the other thing is USDA also has a really generous like 1.5% or 2% loan rate for farmers wanting to install solar.
Yeah, they have grants. They'll give you up to 25% of the cost of your system.
Yeah, but this is separate from REAP. This
and they have a 75%. No, that's REAP. They have a grant and they have a loan program, a low interest loan program. That's all part of the REAP program. But you have to pay at least 25% of the total cost. So you could get a 50% loan, low interest loan, and you could get 25% grant through the REAP program. And these are two parts of the same USDA program. All right. So that's an option, but, and it is for rural rural businesses primarily, but they define those rural businesses as anywhere like a city would be considered rural if it had less than 50,000 people. So people look to see if you qualify, even if you don't think you do.
So, and I just want to say, just to make my point again, is Farm Service Agency, which is your local USDA branch, has a very separate program from REAP, specifically just for, and people should check it out if they live on a farm.
And there are many, many programs out there. And so there is a good website called Desire, DSIRE USA.org. And that has a nice little graphic of the U.S. and you can click on any state and it will tell you all of the programs that are available in that state.
That's really cool.
And it tells you all the local programs, everything. So it's a really good resource to plug into.
So then
I wanted to touch base about some of the scams that are going around, and I call them scams. I mean, I'm calling them scams, but some of them are legitimate, but not necessarily a good deal. Others are out and out, you know, fraud. So you'll see these advertisements, as you were saying before, on Facebook, you know, get money back.
On YouTube, $0 down. Commercials.
A lot of those that are saying get money back, they're playing on this sense people have that there's all sorts of subsidies out there for solar, which there just aren't.
Yeah.
They've almost all gone away. So they're just saying, we'll give you $2,000. We'll give you three. All you have to do is give us your contact information. Well, that's all they're doing is gathering contact information. Then they turn around and sell that to salespeople who call you up and start pressuring you. You're never going to get any money back. I mean, it's just a scam to get your contact info because now you self-identified as somebody who's interested. Now, other programs are saying $0, zero money back, and that may be, or zero money down. You know, it's not going to cost you a penny. Some of those are going to be leasing situations where you're paying somebody, you're basically renting a system from some investor. So the investor is going to pay to put the system on your home. They're going to take the tax incentives. They're going to take any of the subsidies, any of those things. And then they're going to lease it back to you. And just like renting a house versus owning, it may be good for some people, but you're probably going to pay more than if you could have afforded to buy it up front. Mm-hmm. So it may be a good deal for you. I don't want to say 100% leasing is never a good deal. But bear in mind, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, like a car versus buying.
Yeah, what and then the third option is that could be part of the zero is there's this program called PACE, and that's Property Assessed something. Anyway, but basically your local government will finance it and then charge you back, basically loan it against the property, and you'll be billed on your property tax.
Right.
And that's gotten a lot of people in trouble because they don't realize that's what's going on. They think they just got a system for free or whatever, and then they see this great huge bill on their taxes each year. And of course, if you don't pay it, you forfeit your property, you know,
and everything else.
Yeah. So be aware that that's what's going on.
Yeah. And then there's also co-ops. And I know that that's been a great way to get a decreased price because there's group buying. So you can work with an organization. And once they get 30 homeowners that want to install solar, then they go out and they shop in the market to find installers and find the parts that they need. And so there's a discounted rate that way because they're buying in bulk.
Yeah, that's one of the programs, and that's happening in a number of states. And you get that volume discount, you know, because from an installer standpoint, they're coming into a community. They've got a contract to install 20, 30 systems on different homes. So you can get a good deal that way. Another form of solar co-op is, let's say your house is not suitable for solar, it doesn't face the right direction, or it's shaded and you just don't have sunlight. And before I get off of that, I know I'm sort of diverging here, but when I said that South is ideal, I want to emphasize that it doesn't have to be south. It doesn't have to be exactly south. South is the best, but even if you're facing east or west, that's only going to reduce your collection of solar by about 20%. So anywhere between due east, south, and due west, there's only a 20% difference. So, you know, if you're facing east, put 20% more panels on your house. Not a big deal. All the other components are going to stay the same. Adds just a little bit to the cost. But you don't want to put it on the north, right? North is bad.
That's a tough one.
North is bad. You don't want to put it in the shade. Shade is bad. But let's say your home is not suitable. Well, you can buy into a solar co-op, essentially, where they put a bigger solar array somewhere else. And then you buy a certain number of panels, you know? So instead of you maybe putting 20 panels on your home, why don't you buy 20 panels that are part of a 1,000 panel array that's out in a field somewhere, and then they allocate that energy to you. Now that requires the cooperation of your local utility, and some of these guys are not that cooperative. But in some states, like state of Minnesota, they actually require that the utilities cooperate with these co-ops, which co-ops, you should cooperate, right? Just by turn. Then another thing that you're going to hear a lot about here, because Tesla always makes a big noise, is Tesla's getting big into solar installation. And so what they're doing is they've come up with a plan to simply not have any salespeople. They're, rather than designing individually for each home, they're saying, okay, we've got like four sizes: small, medium, large, and extra large, or whatever. And you buy one of those, and we're going to install it for $2.01 a watt, which is dirt cheap. I mean, really cheap. So we'll see how that plays out. One of the criticisms of Tesla in this plan, and when they've done this before, is they use low bid installers. So you get bad installation, lower quality product, and you can't get a hold of somebody. I mean, they don't have a sales force. They don't have customer support. So you're kind of out there on your own. So if you're worried about this at all, I mean, at least for the time being, I'd steer away from it.
Well, and that's a tough one, because even if you have a good installer, they don't want to have to come back and do maintenance. There's a whole, a big need for a whole movement of people to get into the business of maintenance on these arrays and units, because nobody really wants to do that.
Right. So anyway, I guess to sum all of this up, we've covered, you know, a fair amount there, but the bottom line is, if you're interested in getting solar on your home, talk to someone who has it, get yourself connected with a good, reputable organization. If you're one of these people who loves to tinker with stuff, you can do this yourself. It's not rocket science. In fact, Blue Rock Station, if you check out, you know, the solarpvtraining.com, have some courses online and otherwise where you can learn how to do this, and then do it yourself. That's fun. You know, get your friends to come out and help, have a party. So I think that's really the best way to get started. And since we're getting started, we're now finishing. And I'd just like to say that you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. And we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and visit BlueRockStation.com for more information about installing solar.
Shameless plug.
I don't care.
Till next time. Blossom in the night, know the sky's dancing.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.